that the two, those two particular viruses have not much in common.
Well, that's what they saw, and they were pretty healthy people that were looking at them.
I'd really like to see.
Well, you're talking about Dr. Arthur Kendall, whose textbooks are still used for bacteriology in the classrooms. You're talking about E.C. Rose now at the Mayo Clinic. So I can't profess to be a medical expert, but those are definitely the quality of individuals who were confirming that.
So you're coming up against some pretty hefty guys there, Craig.
Yeah, you're saying that. Is there information on that in this article?
In this booklet reprint, yes.
And, you know, Craig, something that might be more helpful or simplistic is that if you change the environment in which something lives, you take, for instance, if you take the oxygen away, we can no longer live. If you consider a germ or a disease, which is a dis-ease in the body, and you change the environment in which it lives, why, in fact, couldn't you kill it or change it into something else?
I find the killing part quite plausible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also true that the expression in physical form of genetic material is affected by the environment that something grows in. But
right.
For one species of bacteria to change into an entirely different species is something of a different order.
Well, but now you must remember that up to this time, who was able to see it? And in fact, today, who is able to see it? So even with what you're saying, your information is based on a technology and knowledge that is currently in use, and the whole idea of this program is they were using a technology which was very plausible scientifically, and they were able to get to a magnification to see the very thing we're talking about.
And you're saying that the point is that they could see them while they were alive with this microscope.
Absolutely.
Right.
Which the electron microscope can't do.
Yeah, right, I understood that.
Okay, Craig, does that help you? We're going to have to run.
Yeah, I was going to just give you one last question, and this will be it. It would seem to me, you did say that every different bacteria or virus would have its own lethal frequency. In the course of experimenting, wouldn't they run the risk of wiping out the friendly bacteria or doing other damage?
No, the frequencies that they ran on, and again, we can only go by the paperwork and the letters, the articles that we have. They hit upon area frequencies. They never showed any adverse effects. In fact, the only big problem they had was when they first started, they found when they used it, even for that one instant, every day, there was too many toxins from these blown apart cells in the body that they gave a treatment once every 3 days, and the body then could assimilate. But we have no idea. I don't know what was taking place then.
Okay, Craig, does that help
you? Yeah, thank you.
All right, thank you for the good questions. You're on Open Mind tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me, Steve and Laverne Ross of the World Research Foundation. We're talking about the work of Royal Rife, the Rife microscope, to which they could see living organisms that have been catastrophic to millions and found a way to get rid of them. But nobody cared. Hey, hello, Rick. Welcome aboard.
Yes, good evening.
Yeah?
It's funny. I was driving home listening to your program in my car. I got home, I opened my mail, and I have a letter from a dear friend of mine saying he just had surgery for major cancer. Mm-hmm. And that kind of a coincidence with your show.
Well, sorry, but it had to happen that way.
It happened. I have a difficulty. Several of my questions have been answered by previous callers, or I think you will cover in a few minutes. I wanted to ask a couple of different ones. I have a difficulty with the conspiracy theories that you're spinning tonight. I have difficulty with them in general. One of the problems I have with the theory, or maybe it's just a misunderstanding on my part, but you seem to be acting as though you can't get funding for this kind of idea. You can't get exposure for this kind of idea. I wanted to suggest that people will fund anything from bad software to B-movies. They will fund, they will invest
first
in all sorts of crummy ideas. You can get money for any kind of an idea. And it seems to me that if this idea is real, if it had any basis in fact, you would have hundreds of nuts interested to invest, let alone the serious people.
Well, to address that particular question, up until this time in this show, we have not really come out and presented the story about the microscope, nor have we gone out and solicited funds.
I had to nudge them a little bit to do it.
So
why?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, this has been a trail that we have been investigating to when we had finally heard about the Rife microscope, to proceed to acquire the data, to learn as much of the story as possible, to acquire records, to acquire the books, to have the microscope, so that in going out and presenting this story, that we had all the facts. Because how can you go out there? Now, I can go along with what you just said. People can go out there with any kind of story to raise funds, but that is not how Laverne or myself or the World Research operates. We are very interested and concerned in this, and we want to present it properly, ethically, and with the complete story to be told. Now, in regards to the hinting of conspiracy, let me pose these questions to you. There were over 120 newspaper articles, including Scientific America, the Smithsonian Institute, the internal minutes of the Mayo Clinic. They used it at the Mayo Clinic for investigation of the poliomyelitis virus. There were articles from San Diego Christian Science Monitor. Now, at our foundation, we're connected to 350 computer databases worldwide. There is not one reference to the Rife microscope, which was already verified and in print to do 30 to 50,000 when standard microscopes only do 2,000 magnification. Now, would you not find it interesting that in perusing every book on the history of microscopes in large libraries, that there is not one word of that microscope ever existing?
I would find that interesting. I find that to be a particularly disturbing part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly sympathize with a lawyerly pursuit of that hidden lead. But on the other hand, you have mentioned that there's a whole group of people, Dr. DeForest and several others, of considerable fame associated with this man, that all of a sudden ignored him or forgot about him, conveniently, it seems. And while on the one hand that could suggest a conspiracy, on the other hand, it seems to me to suggest that perhaps they no longer believed in what he was saying and wanted to distance themselves from a guy who they now considered nuts.
Now, I'm glad you brought that point up, because Laverne and I, very early in our investigations, were confronted with a scientific individual who posed three questions. He said, A, there was a conspiracy, B, the microscope was just overlooked, or C, everybody found it to be a phony. Now, let's look at your last statement. If, in fact, the individuals had found it to be a phony and the Rife microscope was not effective, especially after there were hundreds of articles, would you not have expected that there would have been one article written somewhere about the negative aspects of the microscope?
Yes, I would expect that.
All right. In fact, there is not one article of any kind, nature, or type about the microscope. So our feeling is that the idea that it was proved incorrect and these people backed away does not seem to be accurate, because you're talking about a tremendous amount of exposure where somebody would have said something. You had investigative reporters. Now, the second position would be that a 50,000 power microscope just inadvertently disappeared and was forgotten. Now, we would find that rather hard to believe.
You're sort of assuming facts, not in evidence. Neither I nor anyone else listening has ever seen this microscope, so I wouldn't be talking about the microscope as though it existed, since I've never seen it. No one else has seen it that's listening.
Oh, no. The microscope exists.
Well, what I'm saying is...
And they have it. There's photographic evidence of it.
There's 100 newspaper clippings from everything from the Christian Science Monitor to the San Diego Union to the Scientific America to the Smithsonian Institute.
That were writing about a microscope, in fact, five different
and
ones.
And showed the pictures.
That existed.
But these documents are all 40 years old. So what I'm trying to say is that I have a hard time assuming that such a microscope exists and then use that to prove that it exists. But that's my only objection.
Well, no, you can... they have the microscope themselves at the World Research Foundation.
Does it work?
Oh, yes.
Now, to follow your premise, I hope you're not inferring that articles written in Scientific America and the Smithsonian Institute in 1944 were all erroneous at the time, especially when you're talking about the Mayo Clinic having in their internal minutes discussions fully about the microscope at Northwestern University, at USC. Now, if you have the microscope in front of you, right in front of your eyes today, and you saw the articles 50 years ago, I would find it hard to believe what you're saying.
Okay, well, I want to say that I think think your defense is credible, and you're making me more and more interested in the product. I still wonder a little bit, but I think you've definitely marshaled your facts to be as conservative as you can. I want to make one last position, and then I'll go away. One is that,
that's okay.
One is that there have been several comments here about the revolutionary nature of the use of radio waves or radiation in the 30s and 40s, and that somehow would have made it a taboo. In reality, my understanding is, I'm not a scholar in the area, but my understanding is that people were absolutely fascinated with what radio waves, electromagnetic radiation could do at the time,
mm-hmm.
Having to do with anything. And in fact, as you'll recall, there was a treatment at one time where they treated acne with x-rays and all sorts of interesting things, which later turned out to be catastrophic. But in any event, these things were being tried. I do not believe that the entire medical and biological industries of the 30s and 40s, not one single fringe organization anywhere would not have taken this idea and run with it. There were crazy cures for everything coming out in those days. Why wasn't one of them this?
Because the Royal Rife and his group were meticulous scientists that tried to keep a lid on this. It was very, very quiet. They did not push. They did not make outlandish statements about curing diseases. They just naturally went about their business. Once the story started leaking out, if you read the newspaper clippings, they did their very, very best to be very conservative and be very quiet and do their research. However, once again, after the 1939-1940 period, everything was very, very quiet. In fact, we have a letter written by Scientific America where they stated that they found it interesting that they had read about the microscopes in many journals except the AMA journal, which for some reason was one of the only ones not to even publish an account of the microscope, which I find fascinating.
It is interesting. Thank you very much for your defense.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Are you a lawyer, Rick?
I'm a law student, as a matter of fact, but I have a scientific background.
You do a good job.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you. Good questions, and good to have them. David, you're on.
Hi, it's a pleasure to talk to you because I'm calling from Hollywood, Florida, and how I'm able to hear the show is a long story, but I have in front of me.
I'm delighted.
Yeah. Is that a first Florida listener?
Well, we have a lot of listeners in Florida, but usually not for this show. They don't have the satellites running this time of night.
I have a book in front of me. It's a 100-page report that called The Cancer Cure That Worked, 50 Years of Suppression. And it was just published this year. I fortunately have a few copies, and it's the whole story of the Rife microscope and the frequency instrument, as told by John F. Crane, who I was mentioned a little bit earlier, and a fellow by the name of Barry Linds. And I would very much like to give out the address of how one can get a hold of this report.
All right, you can if you'll tell us how you're hearing us in Hollywood, Florida.
On my other phone line, I have a friend of mine in California that has the radio to the line, and I'm taping it while I'm on the other line, while I'm calling in on this line.
Well, how wonderful of you.
Because of the importance of the show, and because I happen to know Steve and Laverne, I've been to their last convention, and I also happen to have been honored to meet John F. Crane from San Diego, who would work with Rife for the last 22 years of his life, and who is a very technical person that can do a lot with the implementation of Rife's work. And in fact, I think some things are happening financially to see that the research is taking place. And in other words, where Rife's work is to be repeated, but I can't relay any of those details. But let me give out the address.
Promise is a promise. Go right ahead.
Okay, John F. Crane. The book is $10. It's up 104 pages. It's just published. It's John F. Crane Corporation, or John F. Crane, C-R-A-N-E. And it's 4246 Pepper, as in salt pepper, as in pepper shaker, Pepper Drive. And that's San Diego, California, 92105.
Very good.
Is there a... Stephen Laverne, since I understand you have... John also published a 900-page book. I think it's about a 900-page book called The Polarity Research Manual. It's a very expensive book that goes into very, very detailed technical end of Reich's work and related areas, and perhaps Stephen Laverne may, because I understand they have both of these publications, if they might like to just add some information about what John Crane has done and about those two, these two pieces of literature that I've referred to.
Yes, the Polarity book is definitely in our World Research Library and is available for researchers. In fact, we haven't really gotten in too much into the foundation itself. It does state, and again, as we mentioned earlier, John was an assistant for Reif and is responsible for saving the materials and making them available and preserving them up to this time. So really there's not too much more we can add to what you've said. The books, the materials are available and are housed now in a place that we feel are very safe, and we're proceeding along with validating this instrument.
Is it also true that I believe that he also was put in jail a number of years ago for a few years as a result of his efforts in this area? Is that correct? Would you know that?
Did you get that information from him? Or?
Yes, I did. Not in detail, but I thought perhaps you had some information.
No.
In effect. Just as a further area related to this, the whole problems that have occurred by people who've tried to pursue Reif's work.
Well, he had a great deal of problems in the latter part of his life. I didn't know that jail time was involved there.
Well, this was the assistant in reference to John F. Crane.
Oh, to Crane. No, I hadn't heard about that.
For the last 22 years with Reif.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The other thing I'd like to ask is, I think that's, those were about the main points I wanted to raise on that. He would be very interesting to probably have on the air and talk to in reference to this whole matter. It might add an additional dimension to the situation. And I think the potential for perhaps dramatically extending the human lifespan using these kinds of principles, the kinds of knowledge that John relates in the Polarity Research Manual, are there. So that happens to be my interest.
I have a feeling, David, judging from the kind of reaction we're getting here tonight, that we will have to deal with Royal Reif and John Crane again, and we will.
Okay, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be on your show, and I wish it's a great pleasure. I wish we had the show in South Florida.
Well, thank you very much. I wish you did, too, and perhaps that'll happen one of these days. We have a number of affiliate stations down in Florida, and I thank you for going through the trouble you're going through to listen to us in Florida
tonight.
Your
show is worth it.
Thank you.
Thank you,
bye-bye.
David.
Bye-bye.
That's always encouraging. It's 12 minutes of 11 o'clock on a Saturday. Stella. Hello, Stella.
Hello.
How are you?
Not too well.
Well? What can we do to brighten your day?
I just turned on my radio and I heard you speaking, and I think perhaps I'm not too much in what you are on for, but I heard you speak of a chronic pain, chronic illness. I have had a chronic illness since 68.
Mm-hmm.
I have had two surgeries for kick to the roof.
Well, Stella, what we were talking about was a technology that was developed 50 years ago. They could probably get rid of all of that, and it has been hidden and stopped.
I have been listening, and I feel that I really am not... my talk was not about all the things that you are interested in speaking about, but I just heard that chronic pain, and I have tried everything, everywhere,
I understand.
And everywhere for kick tillaroo, which has left me with complete pain constantly.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, and perhaps that had this work been able to surface as it should have been, that you wouldn't have to go through that right now. And that's what we're trying to bring to the attention of the public this evening. And thank you very much, Stella, for joining us. And
okay. I just heard the
yes.
chronic pain, and I thought, there's maybe a doctor.
You knew what we were talking about.
No,
okay.
I didn't know what your other...
I mean, you understood what that was.
Yes, I did, and I was listening to all of it the whole time.
Okay.
And I hope it will help sometime. I have had surgery
yes.
for cancer, but mine was very very mild and very successful.
Well, let's hope that we can be successful in getting this out so that you wouldn't have to do that again.
My tic-tac-roo is something that there's been very little research.
Okay, and we're going to have to go, but thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, thank you very much.
And Bob, you're on.
Hi there, Bill. It's an absolutely great show.
Thank you.
I have several interesting things that one of them is since the whole process of Royal Rife's involved frequency generation in the cure of disease, and he existed at the same time as Nikola Tesla, who was a frequency generator,
mm-hmm.
and they meet. I wonder whether Steve knows.
Through one of our contacts, we were told, but again, we don't have any hard data on that, but these individuals all definitely knew of each other. And we find this fascinating. It's the same as George Lakofsky and the multiple wave oscillator, and there was much talk that this was developed for him by Nikola Tesla, but we don't think that there's any question that Tesla was very aware of what Rife was doing.
It was in the latter days of Tesla, but though he wasn't so active, his mind was very active. Probably it was his most active period. Wouldn't it be great if we knew what was going through it at that period in time?
Now, I'm really curious as to whether a frequency generator exists that could currently exist right now that could do this kind of thing.
I think any frequency generator can do the same thing because, again, there were two separate instances. One is the microscope, the other one is a frequency generator, and a frequency generator, if it was attuned to the right frequency and had one or two other characteristics, would be able to do the same thing. The problem would be the frequencies that they had logged in their day based on their equipment would not necessarily be the exact frequency settings today, and that's where the experimentation would have to be, but a frequency generator would do it.
Well, they were not quite as primitive as we like to look in retrospect.
That is true, too.
However, I do have a little contribution here. I hope it's a contribution. And the chemo medical establishment has always opposed anybody who is not in it. If you were a doctor, you were in, and you could even come up with some pretty far-out things. The opposition, for instance, to a chemist who was Pasteur, to his work, was by the medical establishment, was to the point of practically imprisoning him for having dared to do anything that might treat a human being. And this is the kind of... you've also had some skeptical telephone guests tonight who are the type of people who will, in general, form the most violent kind of opposition to any outside the establishment approach.
Well, we've had skeptical people, and there's nothing the matter with skeptics. I think that skepticism is a very healthy thing.
Yes, in fact, we would add that we ourselves are all skeptical. The three of us in the studio here are pursuing this from the standpoint that we want to learn. We want all the facts. I think that you have to approach it from that particular direction.
What I'm trying to suggest is the only way to obtain the money to do it is through a non-fractal approach. That is, you create a generator, use the frequencies known, and present this to some cancer patients as, hey, would you like to try this? And they will do the selling for you.
That is, unfortunately, that is illegal in the United States.
You're not charging them.
It doesn't make any difference. You're practicing medicine without a license.
It has to be done through the auspices.
Medicine had to involve a fee.
You have to be done through the auspices of a doctor, Bob, and it has to be done if he wants to be accepted what is known by an AB blind test.
To have a test to do it. You can say, hey, would you like to get in front of this machine just to experience it? Not to cure your cancer, just to experience it.
The data that would come out of something like that...
You don't need the data.
Well, you do need the data if you're going to get it out and into the mainstream. And the idea is to get it into the mainstream.
Because those kind of people who were experiencing these things and also in the experience obtaining a cure...
In the long run, Bob, you're correct in one way. The bottom line is that it works, no matter what the doctors may say, if that's the case.
Well, without belaboring the point, I'd like to just say there's also an immediate inference that if it can cure cancer, it can cure AIDS.
That probably is true. There's no reason to believe that it's not.
And that's my contribution to your wonderful show.
Well, thank you.
It's
a
good
one.
Have a
good evening.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you very much, Bob. And Margaret, you're on.
Hi, Bill.
Uh-huh. I don't have too much time, so make it fast.
Okay. I was wondering, now that you have the documentation and all of the evidence that you need to present this publicly, if you are interested in getting on nationwide television. And if so, have you tried to contact any of the major networks to do this?
I had to twist their arm to get them on this little local show.
Okay, well, would they be willing? Because the thought occurred to me that right now the biggest thing that you require is communication.
That's true.
And if everyone, the listeners, sent a letter or telegram to the major networks and just besieged them with letters, quite possibly you could get on one of the shows.
I think they're a good candidate for one for Oprah.
Oprah would be wonderful.
And the new ABC show in the morning.
Absolutely.
Good idea, Margaret. Thank you. We'll maybe build a fire under them here and get them going, okay?
Okay.
We're going to take a break for news. We'll be back with Steve and Laverne. 50 years ago, all he did was a simple little thing. He built the most powerful microscope that had ever been built. He looked in there and he saw viruses that were devastating mankind. And with Dr. DeForest, Lee DeForest, he developed a way to kill all those viruses that cause cancer and leukemia and tuberculosis and a whole list. And it never came to pass. Sad, isn't it? What politics and money and greed will do. Well, our guests tonight are Steve and Laverne Ross of the World Research Foundation, and fortunately so much of the work of Dr. Rife's and indeed his microscope, one of the five, is in their keeping. What all goes on at the World Research Foundation?
The World Research Foundation is a nonprofit foundation, Bill. We collect information from worldwide sources on all aspects of health and healing. We have an on-site library that has books going back to the 1600s in a wide variety of specialties. We also are connected to over 350 computer databases around the world, where we're able to scan, as an example, in the Medline databases, 5,000 medical journals in 7 seconds on any subject. Our foundation doesn't take any particular position. We're unbiased. We're neutral. We're open to the public. And basically, our main purpose is to collect as much information as possible on every health technique, diseases, and illnesses, so we can give an edge to somebody who's in need.
And this is open to the public and to healthcare professionals or researchers who need additional information.
And where are you located?
We're located at 15300 Ventura Boulevard, Suite 405, Sherman Oaks, California.
Being an old Valleyite, that's at the corner of Sepulveda and Ventura.
Ventura,
right.
Right there on the southwest corner. That used to be the American Bank building. They moved across the street to the big building.
They did that right after we put in our literature. We were in the American Savings building, and then they moved the whole bank across the street. But we're very proud of what we're able to do. We have a network of advisors around the world in many different countries who send information to our foundation many times before it even appears in medical journals. And once again, this is in all the various specialties, but we are not just into alternative or holistic medicine, because we are tapped into every medical database of standard medicine.
So for the researcher, it is a haven.
We like to think so. We're trying to do that.
It is a fascinating place. I've had the pleasure of being up there myself. So one of the reasons I wanted you to explain that is because you are the World Research Foundation, and there would be some question, I thought, why aren't you researching the Rife microscope and doing all of these things that you want to do? It's not that you don't want to. It's not what you do. This
right.
has to be put in the hands of skilled doctors.
The professionals.
The professionals who know what they're doing, who can deal with this kind of technology. Who may have to open their mind and change their mind about the way the human body functions and the way this disease is to be removed from the human body. But there certainly are those doctors. There certainly are those laboratories. They're somewhere.
See, I think an important element is we, in our foundation, acquire data. We look at that data. We analyze that data. We try to extract the valuable aspects, but we don't place a value judgment. The Rife microscope is one particular element that we're discussing this evening, but I think based on a lot of the questions of even of your callers, there is factual data that exists. We have scourges upon mankind that have not been cured. You have a medical establishment that is currently saying in regards to cancer that the answer is just around the corner. And Laverne and I have some old journals, the science newsletter from the 30s, that said the answer is right around the corner. They're just going to have a breakthrough. So the question really is, in relation to your last caller before the break, yes, there should be exposure. Yes, there should be a lot more pushing, because these should be tested out. We're all agreed that something is happening here, that there may be something important, and shouldn't we be trying every single element and aspect as to its validity and effectiveness? People are dying by the millions of diseases and illnesses that it does not appear the current modalities are effective. And I don't think this is any secret. It's even appearing in the medical journals. Mm-hmm. Ted Koppel on Nightline ran in a show where he talked about the cancer war. What is happening with this war on cancer? The Rife microscope worked on a multitude of diseases, which showed that the basic principle is very sound. That is what we would like pushed. And if people really want to get involved, they should start pushing some of the established funding agencies. They should start pushing some of these research areas. And I would make this challenge to your listeners. Write to the charities that you currently give money to who are doing research in the areas of cancer and ask them for their specific researches that they're doing.
Or write to the City of Hope, which is one of the great researchers here in the Southern California area. And well, we have so many. There are a lot of people who could take this information and run. The data is extensive. A lot of the work has already been done by some of the most credentialed doctors in the world. They were saying 100% cure rate of catastrophic diseases. Let's check that out. You know, these were not a bunch of mystics. These were some of the finest professionals we had in the business 50 years ago.
I'd like to throw in a particular article here, which I think you'll find interesting, from the San Diego Sun, January 7th, 1932. The article was Dr. Lewells Barker of Johns Hopkins University. Now, we haven't mentioned him. The article states, Dr. Barker had just come from a visit with Dr. Raymond Royal Rife, inventor of the new microscope, which recently created a stir in scientific circles, where it demonstrated a magnification of 10 times more powerful than anything in use today. He said scientists were claiming the microscope was violating all the laws of optics. So Lewells Barker said, I told Rife we would just have to let them get some new laws. Well, what I've always loved about this particular individual was people establish barriers in their mind. We had the individual who earlier mentioned that he didn't see how a virus could have different stages. Well, they don't have anything that can see to that particular depth. We put ourselves in little boxes, and this becomes our world. And really, what we're trying to do at the foundation, what you are doing with your show, is merely creating dialogue and interest to a degree that people start branching out from their preconceived notions.
We call it a reality box here.
Reality box.
And the reality box is really not much of a box. It's usually just a little one. The thing about laws, you know, the laws of optics, the laws of physics, we have found out that those laws were not fingered by God on stone on Mount Sinai and handed to Moses, that they were simply the observations, the best observations that could be made by men. And they're not laws at all. And we need to keep that in mind. Okay, let's go to George. Hi, George.
Hello, hello.
You're on.
Several short things. First, Bill, this is the second time I've listened to your program. And I bitterly regret that I haven't heard all of those that preceded.
Well, thank you, George. How nice of you.
A fascinating program tonight. The name of the poor fellow who tried to get the doctors in the Viennese maternity wards to wash their hands was Ignaz Semmelweis.
Right, thank you.
Now, I have a suggestion. You're saying, you're urging the listeners to write to hospitals and to
research organizations,
conventional research sources, and I think that's a waste of time. There are just too many millions of sincere man hours of research on the surgical and drug high salaries for anybody to ever crack with research money for you. If you're going to get any research money, you're going to have to go somewhere else. I suggest the electronics industry. Their reputations, about which they're equally rigid, aren't tied up with allopathic, conventional allopathic medicine.
Very good idea, George.
Very good.
I would like to ask if either of either Steve or Laverne is around the Institute during the week. I'd like to talk when I'm not limited by Bill's obvious constraints on time.
Yes, we're around there all during the week, regular hours.
8 to 5, something like that?
Yes, 8:30 to 5:30 in the office.
Actually, from 8 o'clock till 11:30 at night, but we're only open until 5:30.
That's a bad working habit to get into.
They
right?
Sometimes spend 24 hours a day. Now.
Right.
Okay. I would like to call you sometime next week. I have some real suggestions.
Please,
good.
Please do. We'd appreciate that.
It's that kind of interest, George, and
okay.
Those kind of ideas that...